On today's episode of Back of the Bird, we sit down with Zach Manns of the Saskatchewan Rush. Also chat about some really exciting news. Back of the Bird has a new home. We'll get all into the details coming up. Let's get into it. This is episode 108 of Back of the Bird.
Take your first ride and run, baby, run. If you want a sign, this is it. You're mad, your magic, you're as hot as a gun. You want to play with fire, consider this. You'll chase the thrill if it's worth the hit. Cause you never ever want to work for it. Take your first ride and run, baby, run. You got a spine of steel and a roar of thunder.
Right. We're back. Episode 108 of Back of the Bird, brought to you by Cottage Springs. 108 of these, Donnie. Holy shit. But get out there, try your raspberry lemonade vodka, best thing on the market. Get it in you. Let us know how it is. But we'll dive into it. No Pauly this week. He's busy. He's got things going on. He's hanging in Cabo or whatever the hell he's doing.
He's got the life, man, figured out.
Yeah, he's got it figured out. He knows what he's doing. But what's going on with you, buddy?
Nothing. Tough one for us on the weekend. You know, really tough. Peek behind the curtain. It's not super easy doing these podcasts after, you know, losses. And, you know, I didn't play very well. So it's, part of the experience of you just kind of try to roll with it as best you can. And another opportunity for us here on Friday night to get back feeling a little bit better for ourselves. So, you know, not a great weekend for us, but, onward forward and it's all good.
Yep. I feel you, buddy. It's not easy. It's funny. It's such an interesting thing kind of doing the dual life. And when you don't win or whatever, and like you got to kind of just like show up and do your job during the week, like it's just like you feel it, right? And you're like, especially if a game's more physical, and like we're kind of at the point of the year where you're, you know, 6, 7, 8 games in, and like the body's hurting, and it's like you're putting your dress clothes on and your fucking dress pants are sticking to your knees because you got turf burn, and you're trying to balance kind of all the walks of life. But agreed, it's tough when you lose, but these are the times when kind of, in my opinion, like this section of the season is when teams are made. And, you know, you've got two choices when you get to the split of the road, and it's to like stick together and turn to each other or, you know, things go haywire. So, that's, you know, we're at a position where we're trying to figure that out too. And it's, we've had a great response to it just in the room. We got a great room. So are happy about that. But, we're recording this late on Wednesday night, sitting here in the office, fresh off of a big Leafs win. I got a text from my uncle watching the game. I made it on the TV again. Downtown Dan is alive and well. but it's been a long couple of days. We had a client in town. So we were long days of meetings, and then right into dinners and practice last night, and just a lot of different things going on. So, but such is life. That's how it works, man. It's all a balancing act.
It is. And, so that kind of takes us into the next, really the only thing we're really talking about here before we get to Zach Manns, really good interview with him. But a new era here for lacrosse culture, or for a new era for Back of the Bird on Lacrosse Culture Daily. If you haven't seen on social media this week, Back of the Bird has a new home. We're on a website, Lacrosse Culture Daily, www.lacrosseculturedaily.com. You can find the socials at Lax Culture Daily on Facebook or on Instagram, Twitter. We'll have Facebook up hopefully by the time this is out. You can find us on Reddit and, kind of wherever you get your podcast. So just a few things that I want to say, Dan, and then I'll let you maybe say a few words. But nothing for Back the Bird listeners is going to change unless you want it to. The podcast will still be found on Apple and Spotify in the same place as it is now. So your routine, and nothing from our routine is really going to change at all. We're still going to be targeting Friday releases, and the content is going to be pretty much as usual. The only thing that's going to change is the YouTube page will probably be rebranded to be a lacrosse culture page. So you'll see that. And if you're already following us, you might notice that, you know, you're now following Lacrosse Culture Daily in the coming days, but I think there'll be more content coming out on that side. That'll make it more interesting. And if you're interested in this show, you know, I think you'll be interested in some of the other stuff as well. So I got a few more points I want to make, but you know, you want to, you got any thoughts on this?
Yeah. I mean, for me, it's really cool, man. It's something you should be proud of. I know how much work you've put into it. But creating something like this is, you know, for people that like listen to other podcasts, like I know it's not to the same like effect, but like really it's just kind of like Back of the Birds going to be on like a Barstool Sports kind of the Ringer type, you know, website that offers you a one-stop shop for everything that you want, in lacrosse. And I think the sport's been missing that, where you can, you know, in the same position that you can go listen to, or same place, sorry, that you can listen to a podcast, you can go read an article on, you know, the one you put out today, which was cool, with all like the Canadians in the NCAA. That was a really, really nostalgic thing for me to see. And I'm sure it will be for a lot of people, but like, there's a lot of different articles on there though. And as it continues to grow, there'll be a lot more. I know you're doing a ton of writing and a lot of behind the scenes work to get some stuff out there, but, I think fans should be excited about this. Like it's something that our sports needed for a while. Something I think that it'll get other people into it, a behind the curtain type look. But again, nothing really changes for us. Like it's just, it's another distribution for us. And you can kind of, if you go on there and you read an article about somebody, maybe you go and you scroll and there's an episode about them too. And you can kind of get an understanding of who they are. And I think that'll be a fun thing. So, again, be proud of yourself, man. It's, I know a lot of work went into it and I'm sure the work is just beginning, but, really exciting time.
Yeah. So, you know, totally agree with everything you said there. You know, Dan kind of alluded to it, but I'm going to be doing a lot more than just the podcast on this new site. You know, a lot of people have worked hard to kind of bring the site, to life here. And, you know, I just want to kind of say a few things on that front. So, you know, since we've been back to Bird, we've kind of been navigating this balance of players playing and the media stuff. And that certainly gets a little bit trickier now that we're associated with the same brand as some other commenters. So, you know, I just want to be very clear that like our opinions don't represent other folks and other folks don't represent our opinions. You know, I think, lacrosse culture can be an ecosystem and a platform for people to share lacrosse ideas. But I just want that to be clear that, you know, there are writers on lacrosse culture talking about the NLL and, you know, if they think Panther City stinks or if they think Rochester stinks, you know, that's, they're entitled to that opinion. And you know, we wouldn't want people speaking for us and we don't by any means presume to speak for other people. So,
unless they say we're sick. And then, like, that opinion's right.
But
like,
then we're going to have them on the show.
Yeah, yeah. Then they'll come on. So if you're a writer that wants podcast time, fucking write a good one about us.
So on that note, I also wanted to say, like, again, there's a lot of people that are helping to kind of bring this effort together. But if you're a specific – well, if you're anyone who really wants to get involved in this, but specifically for players or former players, NLL players or high-level players, you know, if you want to get involved in the media side – you know, we're doing it now. You know, I think it's been a very enjoyable process for all of us. You know, get in touch with us. We can put you in contact with the right people and get you set up. I think what the website does is it gives us kind of the logistical tools to do a lot more things. So if you're a player, you want to get involved, you know, the next Biz Nasty's out there, you know, we can help point you in the right direction. And, you know, I think rising tides, lifts all ships here. So I think that's exciting. And
anything else you want to touch on a bit?
No, that's all I got for the most part. Again, nothing's really going to change. One thing you will see from Back the Bird is like subsequent articles about podcast episodes. So you'll see a couple of them on the website already. So for example, when we had Brody Merrill on, he told a funny story about his time getting bullied, when he got bullied into playing lacrosse, basically the young guys in Orangeville. You know, that's an article on the site now, in addition to our episode post. You're going to see some written content as well. And then, like Danny said, you know, I have a bunch of written content of my own that will never be about the NLL. You know, I want to keep my my coverage of the NLL to back the bird and telling great stories. But, you know, I got a lot of respect for everyone on the floor, and you know, I want to keep focus on my own playing career too. That's number one for now. So,
hell yeah.
I love it. As a brief ending before we hit to Zach Mann's, a lot of great efforts by Canadians. Braden Maia, four goals closer to the kids on a heater.
I don't even know. Do we have to give him the fucking NIL thing now?
Here's a crazy thing. So someone reached out to me this week about nominating Peyton Cormier, and Virginia hasn't taken off. They haven't started yet. They started this weekend, but I think Peyton is very close to the all-time goals record at Virginia. So and Dyson Williams
all right,
is close.
Peyton, let's go, buddy.
Yeah, Dyson Williams is close at Duke. That's actually an interesting one at Duke, because him and Brendan O'Neill are probably both going to break the record. So it's about who gets there first. And there's a good chance that Dyson will end up breaking the current record and not be the record holder by the end of the year. And then, you know, the aforementioned Braden Maia at High Point might break a record. Hopefully not. And there's got to be some others as well. So we could have like a bunch of Canadians breaking records this year. So it should be a cool year to follow along. And on that note, Saturday is really the first huge day of college lacrosse, when essentially everyone except for the Ivies are playing. So good luck to all the beauties out there, men's and women's, and you know, be safe. Good luck and have a great year.
Love it. All right. Well, why don't we kick it over to Zach Mann's here? This is brought to you by Lucky Penny Media. At Lucky Penny Media, we're a full-service marketing company without hefty agency pricing. We understand your brand is everything to you, and when working together, it means everything to us. You're more than just a client. You're a partner and a teammate. Our philosophy is simple. You grow, I grow, we grow. So here he is, Zach Mann's.
This Victoria, BC native spent his minor career in Saanich. Is that?
Yeah.
Saanich, before playing for the Victoria Shamrocks in junior, where he led the team to the Minto Cup in 2019. He was selected in the second round of the 2019 NLL draft to the Toronto Rock, where he played three seasons before being traded to Saskatchewan in six games with the Rush this year. He's got 16 goals and 17 assists. Welcome to the back of the bird, Zach Mann.
That's the best intro I've ever gotten.
Fucking right. That's the kind of feedback we need, man.
Yeah, I'm glad you did that.
Tires a bit.
Yeah, pump him up so that he keeps doing them too. That's the best way to get him to keep going.
So I looked at your Instagram before this, which I never do, because I had that you played your whole career in Victoria. So because it says you know, hometown's listed as Victoria. So what's the story of playing in Saanich?
Yeah, so I started playing lacrosse when I was like mini type, so earliest you could get into it. And that was for Saanich, the association that I lived in. That was my catchment. And so, yeah, I played for Saanich all the way up until midget. So what is that? Is that 16 or 14 years? It's good.
I think 16.
Long amount of time. Yeah, 16 years. So, and then at that point in BC, we still had intermediate lacrosse. So you guys just had the 5 years of junior, right? The whole way through, I think. So like a lot of you guys played, some of you guys played junior B the first couple of years, right? We had a thing called intermediate. So it was just, instead of playing 5 years of junior, you played 2 years of inter, and then you played 3 years of junior. That rule's changed now. There's no such thing as, or I guess there is intermediate now, but it's more so like junior B, whereas now the good players, they play junior A right out of the midget draft. So I was actually drafted by Nanaimo for the intermediate draft. Yeah, so my first year of intermediate, I was at Drexel University at that point. So I came home, and we were a trimester system. So I only got to play like 6-7 games in the summer for the 2 years that I was away at school, just because we stayed way longer than most colleges. So yeah, my first year intermediate, I actually played intermediate B with like a lot of my like friends from growing up. So we played a few games then. Funny enough, there's a country music festival on the island called Sunfest that happens every summer, and it's a pretty good time. So I think a majority of the guys wanted to go to Sunfest rather than the provincials that we had. So our team just folded. So that was my first year inter. I played like two or three games of intermediate B, which was, it was a good time playing with buddies that I hadn't played with in forever. And then my second year, same thing. I only got to play like 6-7 games, but I went to play for Nanaimo. I showed up to camp there for intermediate A. And we had pretty good team. We ended up losing in the playoffs, but yeah, those first 2 years of intermediate, I only got to play like under 20 games, I'd say, for the two seasons. So I'd missed out on a pretty good chunk of box lacrosse being at Drexel. So once you play intermediate for 2 years, you go into the junior draft. I got drafted by Nanaimo again.
Okay.
So they picked me up in the first round of the draft, and I was at school. So I only came back. We were the worst team in the league. I played 6 games. We didn't make playoffs, and my summer was over pretty much. So I played pretty much a month of lacrosse. So those 3 years, I barely even played summer ball, which was pretty tough because I'm more of a box lacrosse fan. I was never a huge field guy, so that was hard on me. But then the following year, so this would have been my fourth year junior.
Okay.
Well, technically only my second year junior.
Yeah.
It would have been the fourth year.
Okay.
I got traded to Victoria.
Okay.
And that was when I started to kind of excel in junior. That first year I got traded to Victoria, we had a great team, guys like Brad McCulley, Marshall King, the list goes on. So I was actually playing transition for that team.
How did you like that?
I always kind of thought of myself as an all-around player growing up. I prided myself on both ends of the ball. So I kind of was just like willing to do it was whatever it took for the team to succeed. And I got to get enjoyment out of it, and I got my shots on defense for sure. I made sure that me and Austin Madronic ran out the back door for for that team, and yeah, we got our shots for sure.
Just circling back to the country music thing, because there's a similar thing happens in Ontario with the thing called Boots and Hearts.
Yeah,
I always remember it used to fall right before the semifinals of Junior B. So I remember going to watch some of the games, and maybe you could say some teams had dual interests. Sometimes, like,
yeah,
the interest wasn't always on winning games, maybe.
Yeah.
But like the exact same thing would come up, and it was always like the team that won would be pumped because they at least were going to the finals. But it was a nice consolation prize for guys sometimes.
Yeah, that's I've heard some crazy stories from guys. I'm not going to name any names, but guys going from Sunfest leave in the middle of the night to go play their lacrosse game the next day, and then they're back at Sunfest that same night. I've seen plenty of those. So lacrosse players will do anything to have a good time.
That's the that reminded me of a story of I think it was Whitby, that there was a group of a certain guys on Whitby that were doing the back and forth and like catching the team bus, just like still pinned from Boots and Hearts and going right to the game and cruising. Cause I would have been like I guess for junior A, it would have been like the first round series. Right. So like that was, they were kind of like, if you had a powerhouse team, you could kind of glide your way through that series, but they weren't shy to have their fun. That's for sure.
Hey, you gotta have a little bit of fun. Especially the summer season, man. It's such a grind. So you gotta have your fun when you can.
It's funny. Danny was like, most people who are like doing this kind of thing are like, oh, we weren't great, so we went and partied. Whippy was like, we were so good that we just partied.
Yeah.
wake us up in the finals. Like, doesn't even matter.
One or the other.
Be nice to be on a team that good.
What
was it like growing up on the island? Like kind of being over there, just being in like a beautiful place and being able to kind of just be outside and do all whatever you wanted, really.
Yeah, man. I couldn't really pick a better place to be born. I was I'm pretty blessed, and you know, I always took it for granted growing up because you're a kid, you don't really think of stuff like that. But as soon as I moved away to Philadelphia after I graduated high school to Drexel, it was a bit of a shell shock. I'm like, geez, this place that I've been living on, like, there's a reason that people come there for summer ball and they call it Fantasy Island, right? It's a beautiful place. The weather is always great. Like, I'm living in Saskatoon right now, and it's we got past like the coldest point, but man, I've never felt minus 40 degree weather before. Like, pretty ridiculous.
That's tough. And the wind, there's nothing blocking the wind in Sask. You're feeling that across everywhere.
Yeah, like it's crazy. Yeah, but I mean, circling back to growing up, I had a great childhood. I had a really big family. Like, I have 8 siblings.
And then, holy and then smokes! My parents.
So yeah, like, I have 3. So I grew up with 3 younger biological kids, siblings, 1 little brother and 2 younger sisters. And then when I was young, my family took in a young boy named Sean, who's my foster brother. He's now like 31 or 32. He's actually the one that got me into lacrosse, funny enough. And then I also have my parents take care of 2 men with Down syndrome named Sam and Dan. And they've been with my parents for 20 or so years. So we had a pretty packed house growing up. And it was never a dull moment.
I would imagine so. That's cool, man. I didn't realize that. How is that something like your parents kind of figured out they wanted to do?
It's a good question. You know, that's something I gotta, you know, ask my mom, like, cause she's the primary caregiver for Sam and Dan. And I know she's always had a passion. She wanted to be a teacher when she was younger. And I think she lost the passion for it and got into fostering and just found a love for it. And I mean, if you met Sam and Dan, they're hard not to love. Like, they're just super joyful and awesome to be around. So it was a great experience growing up with them. And I think it was also great just for all my friends and people that were always around the house, just to have a relationship with someone with Down syndrome, and just to be able to be familiar with it and not uncomfortable when you see someone like that out in real life, you know?
Would they be coming to your games and stuff then? Like, how old were you when they, like, your parents took them in?
Yeah. So I think I was like, they've been with us for as long as I can remember. So pretty much like my whole, I think I was maybe like 5. I think we took Sam in, or we took Dan in, maybe a year or 2 earlier than Sam, but I think they've been with us for like 21 and 19 years. So, like, I'm 25, so I pretty much just remember life with them.
So they're buzzing around the rink.
Oh,
and
yeah,
stuff.
Sure. Sports, man. They're the biggest sports fans, which makes things like 1,000 times better. All 3 of my younger siblings and I growing up, we played sports all year round, and they were the number one fans of every one of our teams, man. Like, they have the jerseys. Like, one of them, Dan, he's nonverbal, so he's more of just a quiet fan. But Sam, our other guy, he likes to think he's the coach sometimes and the manager for a lot of our teams growing up. So I have countless stories of him. Like, we'd be on the ferry going to the mainland, and he'd be nagging our head coach of our team to draw me up more plays, or he had a play to show him. Like, there's been a lot of special moments growing up with them in sports and in the locker rooms with the boys.
That's awesome, man. You mentioned, you know, playing sports year round, and like I said, I was looking at your Instagram before this. Yeah. When did you get into basketball, and what was, you know, what was that like? Seemed like, you know, it was a big part of your life, you know, in high school or whatnot.
Yeah, definitely. I'd say growing up, I kind of played pretty much not every sport, but a good amount of sports, whatever, just for that specific season there. And my parents always preached being a multi-sport athlete. Honestly, I can't thank them enough for that. I think that's why I'm the athlete I am today, is just because I played so many sports growing up. But Yeah, growing up, I would just play basketball, like the whatever club league, for a couple of months out of the year, and then play all the other sports. But once I got into high school, that was when I started to take basketball a little bit more seriously. I found a love for it.
Are you still playing now?
So the gym we work out here in Saskatoon, it's called Ignite Athletics. There's a basketball hoop and like a mini, like it's a 10-foot rim and a little playing space. So we get some shots up pretty much every day for warm up when we work out, but we don't really go do too much up and down. I would love to, but just the risk, like my ankles are so bad these days, man. It's so easy to step on someone's foot and turn an ankle and be out for like 6 weeks. Like, but I'd love to, because I think it's one of the best workouts, like especially for lacrosse.
No doubt, man. Every time I explain the game to somebody that doesn't understand the game, it's like it's your combination of hockey and basketball, like your standard answer. But it is so relatable, and I found it cool even recently. Like I've started watching more NBA games on TV, because like everything that they do are things that happen in our games. Like it translates so well.
It's crazy. Yeah, you can see, and you can even pick up on little things, like just little tiny niches, like maybe the way a guy comes around a corner or sets a pick. Like some of the things are super transferable. I think the biggest reason I kind of fell in love with the game of basketball is just because I really wasn't super skilled at it growing up. Like I only played it for a few months of the year, and it was never my best sport. I was always kind of just like a defender and just a grinder. So I think I kind of fell in love with the grind of wanting to get better at the sport. You know, lacrosse, I played since I was at such an early age. The game kind of just came natural to me, and I was always pretty good at it. So I think basketball, the reason I loved it so much is just it was something I could see I wasn't the best player, not nearly the best player as even other kids on my team. So that was something that I enjoyed, just trying to progress my game. That's really what made me found the love of the game for, just the grind.
No doubt. So it was your second last year you got traded to Vic, is that right?
So you said, yeah. So we're running on to the grand finale that ends in absolute heartbreak by producer Don over there. So our fourth year junior with my first year Victoria, I was playing out the back door. We were a great team, but we ran into the Adanacs in the first round of playoffs, and we could, I don't know, I think we maybe scored 5 goals one of the games, but Del Bianco was pretty hard to beat in there. So we didn't have much luck that year. He pretty much just owned BC for his entire junior career.
He'll be juiced up. He'll be putting that clip on repeat over and over again.
Maybe we cut that out.
Yeah.
Cut that out. He doesn't need his tires pumped anymore. Yeah.
And then the next year, like, did you guys trade for like any other guys or anything, like make any moves? Or was it just like guys kind of graduated up and you guys just felt like you were ready?
That year we had so my first year at the Shamrocks, we had grabbed Dunkerley from Orangeville, I believe that was the year. So that was Dunk's first year playing with us, and he was great. And I mean, he only got better in his second year with us. I'm trying to think back. I don't remember us making any crazy trades that year, but I think pretty much every other team did. Like I remember Langley loaded up and New West loaded up. It was, I mean, so like that's, I don't like that. I don't like it. I don't like what summer lacrosse is kind of turning into, where guys kind of just get to go wherever, and it's not what it used to be.
Yeah. Yeah. It's
we def-
yeah. 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 Do you definitely, Donnie's sitting this one out because he did exactly that. But
no, but I mean, if I was in your position, like I would have done the same thing.
Yeah. So. It is tough though. Like even like senior ball now is like one of the craziest things going. It's like you got two teams, especially like out east, right? You got like two teams that are kind of just, they're going to be in the final. We'll see what happens between them and then go from there. But and now
two more teams, by the way, in Ontario this year, back up to 7. And Coburg's back in, and Oakville's back in, and Owen Sound's in. So we're up to seven, back up to seven. So just when people thought the MSL was going to die, we're back.
Come back with a little, they call that a capital injection from, and now you're convincing guys not to play in the, that other outdoor league. So it's, it'll be an interesting little summer for that, I think. But
it's not summer lacrosse without some politics, right?
Yeah, I live for the summer lacrosse drama. to watch it from afar, it's all time.
I mean, yeah, out west, I feel like it's not nearly as bad as, like, I feel like there's, you're hearing about some drama every other week out east. Summer lacrosse.
Guys sitting on the IR all year and then jumping in the lineup. I live for that. Just seeing who's jumping back in, then all of a sudden they're healthy. But
You gotta do what you gotta do.
Yeah, no, I respect it most of all.
Once you start hearing about guys saying, I'm going to play my minimum games, and then I'll see you in the playoffs, like, that's when you know you're just – it's just a bad.
Yeah, that was – I never really understood, like, my first couple of years as a senior, I never really understood, like, why are all these good guys always keep saying minimum games? I was like, what does this even mean? What's going on? You only see them four times all summer, and then they're ready to rock for playoffs. But it is
– I'd always be confused as, like, the best guys growing up, they'd always be on different teams almost every year. I'm like – I'd be confused. I'm like, I thought this guy was on Maple Ridge.
Yeah.
This year's on Langley. I'm like, what's going on here?
Getting shipped around, whoever's loading up. But let's jump back into that Minto run. Donnie, you got in here playing at home, but not really. What does that mean?
Well, it was funny because we were playing. Obviously, once you get to the final series, there's only two teams left. So we're obviously on the road, but Langley's on the mainland. So, like, Victoria's not really a home team either. So I was like, that's what I had in the notes. It was just like, what was it kind of like? Technically, you're the home province, but you're like, you know, 3 hours from home. It's not like your buddies are really there or anything. Did it feel like you guys were at home, or was it just kind of felt like any other road trip?
Nah, definitely. The LEC does definitely not feel like home. You know, how many times I've played Langley in there. So it just felt like another game at the LEC, to be honest. I mean, obviously when you have family and friends in the crowd, it does make it feel a little bit more familiar. But yeah, at the end of the day, it was just another game at LEC.
So were you tight, by the way, with all those, like, that's kind of been a big generation of Vic guys. Like, they were good, obviously, you know, your last year and then good, you know, before and after that. But lots of guys like yourself and Dodgy and there's been a ton of guys that have come through. Were you tight with those guys all the way through without, like, given that you didn't necessarily play for Victoria as a kid or, you know, were those kind of more relationships that you gained when you got to junior?
I'd say those were relationships that we kind of started in high school. Okay. So I went to Claremont, which is like the only, at the time it was the only school on the island that had a lacrosse team. So pretty much any kid who wanted to play lacrosse, post-secondary, or even just enjoyed playing lacrosse more than the average kid, they were at Claremont. So I kind of knew it was a pretty fun atmosphere because you'd have kids from every single district team all going to the same school playing field lacrosse with each other. But then in the summers, we'd all be battling against each other for our respective clubs. So I had great relationships with them, and it honestly made the experience more fun battling with the guys that you were good buddies with off the floor.
Yeah, that's awesome. And then, transitioning kind of to the next step of this, you know, you were at Drexel, for a while and then ultimately made the decision, to enter the draft. But if I'm not mistaken, that was early, like that was a little bit early, to enter the draft. What was kind of that thought process like? And, you know, what kind of led you to say, hey, maybe I'll put my name in the draft.
Yeah. So when I had left, Drexel, my plan was to actually play basketball at, Camosun College is called in Victoria.
Oh, nice.
So yeah, so that was my plan to continue my education there. And to be honest, I never had really thought about the NLL just because being in Victoria, I was sheltered from it in a way. Like, you'd never really see games on TV and you wouldn't really, I mean, obviously there's a lot of guys from Victoria that play in the NLL, but if you're not super, super into lacrosse, which I was playing, but I wasn't really watching it a ton. So I hadn't really even thought about playing in the NHL a ton, but that summer playing, when we went to the Minto, that was kind of when the idea had been brought up to me by one of my high school coaches, Darren Reisig. He was one of the first people that was like, you know, you could probably play in the NHL if you wanted to. And I was like, oh, let's see what that's all about.
And then what do you remember kind of about the draft night and kind of the last draft there before COVID? So did you go? Was it in person? What was kind of the memory of that?
No, I was I didn't go. I was spent it watching at home with my family. I'll never forget where everyone was sitting and everything. But I just spent the draft with family and played it pretty low key. But yeah, it was definitely a nerve wracking night. I was waiting for my name to be called for a while. I think it was a little bit nerve wracking, but there's nothing better than hearing your name called. And when you finally hear it, it was unreal.
Were the brothers pretty fired up when your name got called?
Yeah. They eat it all up. Like we actually play Vancouver this weekend. So my whole family will be in attendance and Sam and Dan will be rocking two man's jerseys for sure.
How many tickets you got out?
I think I'm probably around just 25-ish, just family and then a few friends.
Wow.
That's a good number.
That's nothing compared to some of the mainline guys like Kuznetsov, Clark Walter, Bobby Kidd. Like they got like hundreds of tickets.
You gotta tell like some of these guys, you gotta tell them to buy tickets. Like it's $10, you know, or like maybe I don't know how much it is, but
well, I'm sure they're over the limit.
They ordered them. They didn't get 100 free tickets. I think they figured out a way to buy them in bulk or something.
Well, yeah, that's why I know that. But I figured like. Are they paying for them or?
They're paying for them, but I assume they're.
They got a discount or whatever.
For buying that many.
Yeah.
I hope.
Yeah. Well, hey, good for them, man.
I'd be collecting $10 from everybody too. Like, send me an e-transfer, boy. Here's the email. I got direct deposit on. Don't need a password. Get that thing into my account.
At least you're not buying a pint for the rest of the night after that.
But then you got to drink 100 beers.
It's true.
You got to get money's worth.
Yeah, you got to get even. But when you were drafted to Toronto, did you go and live out there right away?
Yeah.
So give us your impression. Did you move into the mansion immediately?
Yes, I did. It was crazy.
Walk us
man.
Through
it
that.
It was crazy, man. Like the whole experience. I mean, so I didn't really even know a ton about the NHL even when I was moving to Toronto. So going there, like everything was just, it was, my eyes were just wide open everywhere I go. Every person I met, it was insane. But when I first got there, I couldn't believe the place that I was going to live at. Like I remember Adam J, he's a Victoria boy. So he's the guy that I knew beforehand. He was one of the only guys that I knew on Toronto. The only guy. So he sent me just the link to what our house, the mansion, what it looked like. And I remember just seeing it like, where am I going right now? This is going to be insane. And yeah, I mean, living with all those guys, like at one point we had seven or eight guys living in that house. So we had some fantastic times, man. I'll never forget those days.
Were the Slapshot Regatta days still around? Were you guys shooting?
Dude, so I got a bit unlucky in a sense that I moved into the house after the basement had pretty much been totally gutted.
Oh, okay.
So, like, because you played Slapshot Regatta, I assume.
Yeah, I played numerous games of Slapshot Regatta down
there.
Yeah,
so I never had to get to play that and had that privilege because when I moved in, the basement had flooded. So the house was already starting to, that was the downfall, really. When I got there, that was the downfall.
Oh, that place just started falling apart at the seams.
Were you there when the tackle heard around the world when Gillies was racing And
no, but I've seen that video a couple dozen times, man, and it never gets old.
I didn't realize there's a video of it. I don't think I've ever seen the video. I don't know if I want to see the video because the description of having Gilly tell it on the podcast was so funny.
Oh, it was like, why it was, it's like an open, it's an open field hit in like Ireland versus New Zealand in like the Rugby World Cup, just an all time layout. But I don't even know if we've ever even told this, the one story though, when like early days that they were there when like Bergie was still there.
Yeah.
And the pool didn't work, but they just wanted to put like enough chemicals in the pool to like shock it so that they could still use it. And they just dumped everything they could find into that thing and then started swimming around. Like you came out of it and you were basically radioactive. It was completely insane.
Yeah, that pool probably take a couple of years off the fellas' lives, but
Worth it. A couple backflips with the boys. Come on.
Man, like that property was such a good time when it was during COVID, like those like months we had off, we had so much free space to just do whatever we wanted. Like we'd be chipping balls. There'd be times where we had a little John Deere. We'd be like getting towed on our skateboards on the John Deere around the property. Like we had a little river that was kind of all around the property. And Brad Cree, this is a good one. Brad Cree, on his birthday, we had a river boat race. So everyone had to bring their own boat, and we brought them up to the top of the river and watched it go all the way down. And yeah, it was like we had some great times there, man.
It's literally just Rob Dyrdek fantasy factory going on there.
At one point, this was like the last stages of us living there. We moved everything. There was this like massive dining hall, which was super extravagant, like massive high ceilings, this like ridiculous chandelier that looked like it costed more than everything I owned times 100. We moved everything out of it and just drilled a basketball hoop up on the wall, and we would just play ball inside the house.
That gives everyone an idea of how big that place is.
Yeah, like we literally had enough room to play 2-on-2 games and actually like go decently hard. Like it was ridiculous.
So funny, man.
I'll see if I can find a clip maybe to send you guys so you can maybe attach it on Twitter or something. Because
that would be great.
I definitely have some videos of some games like me and Latrell playing against Adam and Challen or something.
Yeah, we need that. We need that for sure. But I mean, that's kind of like the off the floor stuff, but like, what was it like your first little while playing there on the floor?
Super humbling, I'd say, right? I got there and I didn't realize how good you could actually be at lacrosse, I think, like by some of the guys. Like I remember my first training camp, I'm playing on the other side opposite of Tom Schreiber, a guy who is arguably like the best player in the world and has been, I mean, in the overall game, and has been for a while now. So I was pretty starstruck playing with him, playing with guys like Challen Rogers. Obviously Dan Dawson was someone that he was my favorite player growing up, seeing him in Victoria, going to his camps and stuff. So playing with him was unbelievable, but yeah, it was humbling. I remember my first training camp, I was cutting backside in a 5-on-5. Tom Schreiber was running downhill on the opposite side, and he threw a no look around the world skip pass straight to my stick. It just hits my stick and falls out, and I'm like, I had no idea what the hell that just happened. I remember Matt Sawyer came up to me and goes, yeah, he's pretty good. You got to be ready for that one next time. I'm like,
all right. Be ready for the down the alley around the world skip is definitely nothing I've ever heard before in my life.
No, it was, I don't know if he said be ready or he's like, yeah, this guy, he's pretty good, eh? Or like,
yeah.
Yeah, it was insane.
That's wild. Do you vividly remember your first game?
Yeah, for sure. Man, it was Actually, you know what? I almost remember my second career game almost more vividly. I think just because I scored my first career goal then. I think that was kind of why. That was kind of why it stopped.
Spoken like a true old guy.
I almost like to just forget the first game and then just think about it as the second game as my first game. But yeah, I mean, playing in front of that many people was something that I'd never experienced before, and it definitely took a little bit of while for me to get used to. I remember even for training camp in Toronto, my very first training camp shift, I remember I just completely dropped the easiest pass of all time. Like, I was first off the bench. I think we were playing Colorado. I was first off the bench, down to the corner. Defender came across, throws me the ball. I just drop it. They pick it up. I'm like, I probably shouldn't hold my stick this tight.
Funny. Is there like, over your time in Toronto, is there like certain memories or certain things that like stand out, like whether it's like advice from Doss or like something else in gameplay or in practice that you're like, okay, like this is the NLL now, outside of the around the world skip pass?
Yeah, I mean, I think just how serious and professional everyone really, really took it. Like, I didn't realize how much film guys were watching and how much guys worked out and how much people really took it seriously. And I think when I was coming in, I was a little bit, I don't know, but I was just, I don't know if I was, I'm forgetting what I'm saying, to be honest. So let's regroup.
Yeah, no, just, I mean, it's like one of those things, you come in, it's like you just expect to be able to do the things that you did at the level before without, like, it's not like, I mean, I don't know about you guys, I wasn't watching film in junior. Like, you're just going out and you're doing the same thing and being like, all right, we can win this game. And then you come into the NLL and, you know, these guys are watching clips on, like, what goes in on a certain goalie or, like, what works on the defense, right? It shocks the system a bit, like, how much goes into it, because everyone knows you. Everyone knows what you do. They're watching film on you. So you have to kind of figure out a way to beat them in order to get to that next level.
Yeah, it's crazy to think about it that way. And I think, like, almost every professional game, no matter what the sport, there's almost like a game within the game, in a sense. Like, there's a game of chess being played while you're playing the lacrosse game, which I think what makes pro sports so entertaining and so incredible to watch and to play.
And it's funny, go ahead.
Someone I saw someone talking about that on Twitter one time where they said, if you don't understand the nuances, then every sport is boring, because someone was saying baseball is boring. And it's like, well, if you don't understand the chess game of the pitch selection and the fastball off speed, like, you could say anything is boring. And lacrosse is actually a good, like, it's not really ever boring, but you are right that, like, every game has its nuances, and, like, if you don't understand them, they all look stupid. Like, football, if you don't understand, like, the play calls and that stuff is like kind of boring and stupid, right? And it's like anything. Yeah. Basketball, same thing. Like, I've never really thought about it, but it is true.
Yeah, no, it's cool too. I think there's been, even just in lacrosse, like, certain goalies that you'll face where you'll be playing a game within a game just with them on your shot selection. It's pretty crazy, man. How much mental side, I think, is 95% of it.
Yeah, there's no doubt. It's always fun to, like, going to, like, a family gathering or you're hanging out with your buddies, like, man, I was watching the game. Like, why didn't you just, like, go to the net and try and score, or just, like, shoot right when you got it? And it's like, yeah. Well, like, we're, like, there's systems here, boys. And, like, you think I want to run back to the bench after shooting with 27 seconds left on the shot clock and it doesn't go in? Like, you know the mental stress we're going to be under here? Running back off and Matty Sawyer is literally biting your throat because he just ripped one. Like, you don't need to be dealing with that, but – Let's kind of get into a little bit of the trade.
Carl, can I ask one more question about Toronto first? Yeah. Can you tell the baby shark story? Where did that come up? Because when they played that after you scored?
Yeah. So my rookie year, I think I was like the youngest guy on the team, maybe the second youngest. I was, I want to say, how old was I? I was 20, 21. And our social media guy and one of the guys that works upstairs, Mike Hancock, they decided to make my goal song Baby Shark without telling me. So yeah, I didn't even know that people had goal songs. So that's what, like, I didn't know to tell someone I wanted, like, if I was to pick, I would have picked, like, maybe some, like, Hypnotized by Biggie Smalls or something with a good beat. But they picked Baby Shark for me, and then I guess the first time I scored at home, the crowd got a good kick out of it, and then it kind of became a thing.
That's all time. That's a good little prank. I do like that.
Yeah, no, it was a good prank, and like, what kind of prank lasts 3 years like that? And I was guilted into like staying with the song just because like the kids loved it, essentially.
You become the guy that every dad is praying scores, so their kid just like is distracted for like that 30 seconds or whatever it is the song plays for.
Or I'm the guy that they don't want to score because they've heard that song 1,000 times in their own living room. And
yeah, that's also
they want to hear it again.
It goes one of two ways for sure.
Yeah, like I've seen some funny replies from the fans on Twitter about just saying it's absolutely brutal. I'm like, come on, have a little fun.
Yeah, it's not going to kill you to smile, folks. Come on. Yeah, now.
Exactly. Right.
So kind of moving into that trade, like, did you have any idea that something like this was kind of like in the works to happen?
It was funny. Like, so I came home for the summer, started playing with the Timbermen, and maybe like, I'd say 3 or 4 weeks into the season, I was playing pretty well up to that point. And one of our coaches had just asked me like, oh, Would you be interested in, like, have you ever thought about getting traded? And I'm like, I haven't really ever thought about that. No, not really. So he said that, and then maybe like a month or two went by, and I got a call from Jamie Dowk, and basically it was like, hey, Zach, this is going to be a tough call, but basically, yeah, we're trading you to Sask. And yeah, pretty much out of the blue.
That's wild. So did you still have stuff at the mansion? Like, did you have to go back to like Oakville and get your shit and then come back again?
So we didn't live in the mansion my last year there. We lived in Oakville.
Okay.
So I was just in a house with Adam J, Rosie, and Latrell. So we were just in a little 4-bedroom spot in Oakville. And yeah, like I had left, I mean, other than like the main clothes that I wanted for summer and like my essential belongings, I pretty much left everything that I had there. So yeah, I had quite a lot of stuff. So when we went to camp in Toronto this year, I went back to the house and pretty much grabbed all my stuff that I needed. Lucky I was able to get back there. But yeah, that one sucked. I had so much stuff to bring back.
Did you just leave shit there too?
Oh yeah.
Suck it, boys. This is a part of the place now.
That was like the same thing with the mansion, man. Like, so many people had lived there and had just left their shit there. So it got to a point where like you could go into, like, there was like 13 bedrooms in that house. You could just go into an empty bedroom and there would be someone's lacrosse bag there. Like it was crazy the amount of stuff that was in that place.
When I was at Cornell, I lived in a 14-person house, and when what? We graduated, yeah, it was sweet. It was awesome. But when we graduated, I was the last man out because I ended up, well, it doesn't really matter, but I was there a couple weeks after graduation, and it was like the exact same thing. It was just like an unbelievable amount of shit was still in the house, and it was like, oh, you're the sucker who's the last one out. We ended up, we beat the shit out of the house so bad and left so much trash in there. We had the security deposit was $1,000 a guy, so it was a $14,000 security deposit. We didn't get any of it back. We had $14,000 in damages, and like we had like 15 holes in the wall and then like a couple, like the second floor guys didn't clean out their kitchen, but it's exactly what you're talking about. Just like shit everywhere.
That, I mean, so, some of the all-time memories too, even from when I was at school, is like some of the shit that would happen to your place. Like I remember, like I walked back into my apartment, and in my, like my place was like the party place, but I walked back into my apartment and it was alumni weekend. And it was like our first alumni weekend, cause it was like the first graduating class. And I walked in and there was three alumni that were holding a fourth alumni and using him as a battering ram to knock down my door. And like, by the end of the battering ram session, I only had a half a door. So like, I would only close the top half of my door. Like when I would go to bed, like I just never got it fixed. It was
Thing is, like, it doesn't matter if it's a wall, a door, people take something being half broken as like license to break the rest of it.
Yeah,
and it's some, like, if it's a door, that's actually okay, but if it's a wall, you're actually just making more holes. Like, just getting more. It does get more expensive if you keep. We lost like almost a whole wall one time because it was like someone punched a hole, then someone like ripped it out, and then someone ripped it out more, and then more and more and more. It's just like, you know, it just like spiraled, and all of a sudden, like, my room was see-through kind
of
thing.
All of a sudden, you just have an open concept 14-bedroom house with a $14,000 security deposit.
Pretty much. And my Mun buddy said he could drywall it, which is the dumbest thing ever, because then it was like, oh, like, Barkson will drywall it.
Oh, yeah, that sounds legit, eh? I got a buddy that can do that.
The whole house was like, no, Barkson will drywall it. Like, go for it.
So, yeah, that guy was the first guy to leave campus right after graduation, so he didn't have to do all the drywall.
He ended up trying, but by drywall he meant like teach himself how to drywall, like he never really done it before. And this wall is like mostly broken, and it wasn't like a properly made wall either. It was like a doorway that they had made a wall so that they could call one of them a bedroom. So it's just like, oh, it's a mess. And yeah, that's why we didn't get any money back. So good times.
We went completely off the rails there.
Sorry, I got carried away.
After you do get traded, like what's year one been like so far in SASK?
Yeah, man, I've had a great experience so far. I think looking back to when I had heard the news, you know, it took me a few days to kind of think about things and kind of just reflect on back on my time in Toronto and the battles that we had there. But as soon as I started to think about the opportunity for me in Saskatoon, playing for the Rush, man, I got super excited. I think, especially just knowing a lot of the guys, we have so many guys from BC on our team and so many guys that are around my age that I've played against growing up for all these years that I have a lot of respect for just from battling with. So it's been super fun to be on the same team as a lot of these guys that I've played against growing up.
It is interesting because we're in kind of the same boat where, you know, most of the team, like, you know, Calgary, Colorado, Vancouver, San Diego are like all BC guys for the most part. And all the East Coast teams are pretty much all Ontario guys. And then like Vegas and us and yourselves are kind of like in the middle there where we have guys from everywhere. It's a cool experience. Yeah. Kind of, you know, you get a lot of BC guys, but some Alberta guys, some Ontario guys. It is cool to kind of meet guys from all different parts too.
Yeah, definitely.
And what's it like been playing in front of those fans?
I'd only played one time in Sask before, like when I was with the Rush, and I remember it being absolutely electric. I think we ended up winning the game in like a super tight, like maybe 9-8 game, but I remember the atmosphere in there just feeling like it was a playoff game and it was just a regular season game. So I knew what I was getting myself into coming here, and I was super excited to feel the home energy, and it's been a treat so far. And I think we stack up a couple more wins here, I think we'll be able to get the barn popping even a little bit more.
For sure. Wins sell seats. That's the name of the game.
It'd be great to be able to get the fan base back to what it was when they were winning championships, but you got to win games, right? And that's hard to do in this league. So just focusing on that right now.
No doubt, man. Well, we've had you for a while here so far, but let's jump on to the number. What made you pick number two?
That's a good question. Growing up, so I wasn't always number two. I've kind of worn three numbers my whole life. I used to be number 21 when I was a kid, growing up in lacrosse. And then in all my other sports, I would wear number 11, just because for some of the sports, they just wouldn't have the number 21. So I'd wear the number 11. And then I think up until junior, I wore the number 11 pretty much in every sport. But then when I got to Nanaimo for my first year of junior, someone had number two. And someone had number 11.
Got it.
So I thought, you know what? Let me just put one and one together. It equals two. And I'll just wear number two.
That's why
I wear number two.
We're simple guys, eh? I like that. That's good.
Yeah, just some simple math, and yeah, I'm a math guy. So
yeah, they do say that. Donnie, you got anything else for Manzi here before we let him go?
No, I got nothing, man. Thanks, thanks for your time. Thanks for coming on.
Yeah, no, it's been a pleasure. Good talking to you guys.
Yeah, man. Thanks. We appreciate it. And again, congrats on the success so far this year. And keep it up the rest of the way, man.
Paulie wishes he could be here, but he's mooching off his wife to get a free trip to Cabo. So
yeah, he's.
All right, man. You guys tell Paul I say hey.
Okay, we will, buddy. Awesome. Hey, appreciate it, man. Thanks, brother. Right, thanks, all right, that was Manzi. Appreciate him taking the time to sit down with us. Really cool story there, actually. That's a full damn house he was living in. That must have been an absolute blast growing up. So again, that's why we do this, man. There's so many stories out there that we have no idea about, guys that we play against for a while. So that was a fun one, but I'm trying to think outside of that. I don't think there's much more to touch on. What do you think?
No, it's you know, good time of year here. I think everyone's done with the bye weeks, and it's going to come fast and hot and heavy here for the rest of the year. So,
hot and heavy is right. I like it. Well, that does it for us. Back of the Bird, episode 108. We'll chat with you next week.
Peace.